there you go.
Our next speaker is Maggie Huff-Roussel, and she's with the Social Sectors Development Strategies, Inc. in Boston. And she's going to talk to us about food programs in India.
Thank you. It's the second panel I've been on that there was a presentation on Haiti, which brings back... Yes. Is this working? Okay. It's the second panel I've been on where there's been a presentation on Haiti where I worked through the 80s back when the Mellons were still alive at the Schweitzer Hospital and we were still supporting the Duvalier regime, and I was living there when the Duvalier regime finished. So, and the topics have been similar, including they were spending more on traditional health on a cash basis at that time, considering that many things were exchanges of chickens. And I wondered, was the solid food, solid fuel, were those cow dung patties, or what were they?
Some were cow dung patties. It's a kind of a mix.
Okay.
The leaves, cow dung, I mean, anything that was not, I mean, just kind of a residual group, anything that wasn't either gas or cooking oil.
Yes.
So that includes a whole heterogeneous mix of
Yeah, because there seems to be a whole little research niche on cow dung patties that was going on in Nepal and in India. They were all over, and YouTube has a recipe for how to make them. Watch this video. This study that I'm about to present is a complicated study. I've got far too many slides. I'm going to go through it quickly. But since these things are up for people to look at later, I thought better to retain them all. There is a full published study by Fanta, which you could get off their website, or I'm happy to send it to anybody who gives me a card, or better still, I give you a card and you send me an email. And it is an unusual study. I enjoyed doing it. This is the study team, two people from India, Sangeeta, who has become a good friend of mine now, who's a sociologist and many other things, and Namani, who got married just after that, who's basically got a very strong accounting background, and Jack Fiedler, who's a health economist. I have nothing to disclose. Some of the findings I have here have nothing or little to do with our original objectives. We were looking at the operational feasibility and financial feasibility of these decentralized food models, the impact on ICDS. There are going to be some acronyms I slip over quickly, which is the big agency, which is the largest supplementary nutrition program in the world, how it could operate its core programs, how well it could achieve its primary objectives using these decentralized food models, and the potential for replication and scale-up through ICDS, though they were operating under a mandate where they're supposed to do this, and collaboration with other Government of India units, which is quite key to our findings, outside the health sector. We went to three states and Delhi. As you all know, any one of these Indian states is much larger than the average country, so big and complicated. I'm going to refer to them by their initials, which everybody does in India, so MP, AP, and Bihar, which is the poorest and considered to be the most corrupt state, but things have been changing a lot there with new state government. AP and MP are the two states that I will talk about most. Bihar was doing something quite different, which they had decided was not working, and they were about to change. And the contrast between these two states is most interesting. Study methodology, we had the four researchers, very multidisciplinary team. I come from a management background. My doctorate is in management studies from the University of West Indies. It's a critique of foreign aid. An accountant, sociologist, and a health economist. We made site visits to these states, variety of data sources, stakeholder meetings, a lot of meetings with community people, with women, as you'll see, with people at the state level, and we did talk to the head of ICDS at length in Delhi, so we met people at all levels of the system. Document review, lots of documents as usual, individual and group interviews, focus group discussions, direct observation, I'll show you a couple photographs, collection and analysis of financial data. We did this in great detail, which surprised the health economist on the team. He couldn't imagine why I'd do that, and then he figured out why. An analysis of available program data at the state level. So this is a typical self-help group member. These decentralized models we were looking at in the two states that are most interesting were operating through women's self-help groups. So there's a micro-enterprise element. Typical district officer that we interviewed, these people tended to understand the program much better than the people at the state level or the national level. They understood every policy shock that had taken place in their state, and there were a number of them. This is Sangeeta sitting doing a focus group with the women. Some women bought themselves uniforms with their extra money, so they have matching saris. That wasn't always the case. And these were delightful. She sat with them for hours. This is an Angiwat Center where the children come. This is where a lot of the supplementary nutrition is going into the some people think they're schools, some people think they're health centers. They're a little bit more educational than health, but they get these supplementary nutrition when they're in these. But in this particular case, which is Bihar, there had been no food for 2 days. There was a stock out in the system. Here, the Angawati worker has actually made the little school center in her own house. The other one was a building outside with no walls but a roof. And you can imagine these children were sort of ready to see us and well-behaved, and it was a planned visit. That was probably also true of the women. Here we have them processing grain in one of the self-help groups. And here they're making rice balls, which is very different than the kind of thing they've been making in the past. So I want you to look at these rice balls because they're much more complicated to make and also to distribute and transport to the centers from the self-help groups. And the data, we took a full 3 years of data for each one of these self-help groups. You know, they keep their records well because they've been trained well to do the record keeping for auditability and things like that, but nobody looks at the data. So we went into this data in great detail, including understanding when they hawked their own jewelry for a while to be able to have some working capital to make these systems work, and had to do things to do their own microfinancing, basically. Okay, and these are institutional level. We met with people at the Micronutrient Initiative, the World Food Program. The World Bank is very interested in this program because it's huge. CARE has had a major role in it, and USAID. Operates under the women under the Ministry of Women and Child Development. Partly a continuation of Title II program, but that has been phased out now. The Indian government, I won't go into the details of that, but it is basically an Indian government program. Earlier on, CARE was a major implementer, but out of one of the states now and almost out of the other. The key target is childhood malnutrition, but the program is very controversial. It's not clear that the program is doing anything to affect childhood malnutrition. It's quite controversial, expensive, complicated, been going on for a long time. Currently has this dual mandate. Universalize, everybody should be able to get it. They don't even say poverty, but the groups, you will see who the target groups are. And decentralize for more community participation, which is where the decentralized food models come in. The traditional centralized approach was that the state would procure, and there was a lot of corruption in the system, so procure from major providers of this food, which is usually a sort of powdered food, always a powdered food that people could make up into different things with certain nutritional value in it, but the nutritional value is basically calorie and protein. And there's discussion about adding micronutrients to that, but that's only being done in an experimental way in a few places. So for the decentralized model, the food is procured, prepared, and distributed by the local community, and that's happened differently in different states. The self-help groups are the best example. and they're working with a SGSY program is basically a program that supports microenterprise right out of the health sector, right out of the Women in Development Ministry, a totally different part of the government. Choice of service provider established these self-help groups, other groups of women and mothers, and individual Angawati workers. So in two of the states, in one state, they're working with self-help groups that were preformed, that were doing some micro loans. You know, they managed money, they borrowed money, they were saving money. And that was the platform that was used to build the decentralized food model. In another state, they worked with mothers' groups, not pre-existing self-help groups. They worked with mothers' groups to have them doing. And in a third state, that was Bihar, they simply gave the money to the Angawati worker and told her to buy the food. And the budget she got for the food was much more than her salary. And there's a lot of corruption along the way, so they are quite certain that a lot of that money was disappearing, not necessarily the Angawati worker taking it, but other people had to be paid to sign her documents, etc. Degree of convergence. By convergence, we meant, are they working across the big institutional borders in the Government of India system? Are they working with the department that does microenterprise, that worries about developing these small micro businesses, that gives loans, that helps people learn how to do banking? Or are they just working within their own department? And how much convergence is there really? Financing option, revenue for food sales only, use of the self-help group credit capital. So in the state where they worked with the self-help groups, these women already had their own accumulated capital. They've been doing savings for some time, and they knew how to manage the capital. They understood it. They'd been going on for at least 2 or 3 years. There was also a sense of trust between the women. They'd been working together. And so they didn't just have their revenues from the food, they had pre-existing money to give them working capital, et cetera, if they hadn't been paid yet. Whereas with the women's, the mothers' groups, they didn't have that behind them. They were trained more in some of the issues that we would traditionally do in the health sector, and they didn't have capital. ICDS, building community level involvement, improving the one, this is the objectives of them, improving the one product image. They don't like the fact that they are known as the porridge department because this powdered food is like a porridge, and that's the way it's usually made up. They wanted to avoid bureaucracy and corruption with this decentralization, and they wanted to deliver fresh, more attractive food, so they are trying to change their own image. CARE and USAID, basically what they want is to leave some kind of useful legacy from the work they've done in the past, including under Title II. And then improving the health status and facility utilization, that more children would show up at these centers, poverty alleviation, livelihood creation. And that's all at the higher levels. And then at the grassroots level for these women, the income generation that producing this food gave them, and building the political, social, and economic capital. These are the spillover benefits that we saw in a major way in this program, which was perhaps the most interesting and best aspect of it. You know, the food was going out. There were less stockouts in food supply when the women were doing it. But also there were all kinds of spillover benefits for these women. Childhood malnutrition in South Asia, especially India, is nearly double that of sub-Saharan Africa, something that not too many people know. And there's a paper called the South Asia Enigma. Three major causes are identified, which is partly informed speculation in those. Poor nutritional status of women, as opposed to the children, particularly pregnant women, that result in a low birth weight. Is the single largest predictor of childhood malnutrition. That would argue for better nutrition of the women, not just small children. It's too late then. The generally low status or level of empowerment of women in India is another major factor. And for the women in these self-help groups, that changed for them, but only for them. and finally poor sanitation and hygiene. So well-nourished, these are three ways of looking at things. Well-nourished adolescent girl ensures well-nourished pregnant woman, reduces the likelihood of low birth weight baby. Well-nourished lactating mother ensures well-nourished 0 to 6 months old. So these groups are key groups, aside from the children. And properly targeted take-home rations, which is, you saw the children that get the rations when they're in these centers, but these people aren't in the centers. They're at home. So they're eligible for the program, but we don't know what happens to this food. There's little, when they do get their take-home rations, who gets it in the household? Is it shared? Is it at all targeted to these groups who are supposed to be getting it? So ways of addressing this Asian enigma. So MP, which is the state that used the self-help groups, is by far and away the strongest example. The basic approach, working with these women who had already been collecting money together and working together for savings, and sometimes doing some micro-enterprise with their savings, but otherwise just helping them collectively save. Okay, I'm going to jump fast. That, we found, was the strongest approach. I've got 5 minutes, so I'm going to flip through a few here. However, there have been some major policy shocks in this state, which the policymakers didn't understand what they had done to the women. First, they had taken a big part of the supply that they had been paid for and given that over to one of the major vendors. There may have been some corruption there, I don't know, but it had basically cut their revenues significantly. I'll show you a chart of this. Second, they'd said in order to get rid of this image as being the porridge department, they'd said, we can't just have one recipe, we're going to have 12, and we want you to change, you'll do two different ones every few weeks. So the amount of ingredients they had to have, the processes they had to use, the finished products they had and how they could pack those and transport them were all incredibly complicated, likely to mean they wouldn't make any profit, so they would stop doing it, but also change things just completely. And at the policy level, they were only thinking, let's make the food more attractive and give more variety. And they were well balanced in terms of nutrition, how they designed them. But as you saw, those rice balls, where it's only one of a dozen recipes, or maybe even 14, I can't remember, that they had to create was very different than this powdered food they had made in the past. So basically, this latest policy shock, which is the second one, there had been the earlier one when so much of the work had been given to a state-level provider, was threatening. It was the weaning food, by the way, that was contracted out to them, and there was no reason to contract out the weaning food in terms of what was actually being produced. So they didn't understand the financial dynamics. So here we have the wheat and soya mixture, which these women started out with, and this shows how the blue graph is the money they were getting from ICDS for what they were producing, and the other red and green graph is the ingredients cost, the red part is the ingredients, and then other costs for producing the food. So as you can see, they're making a reasonable profit at that point, and they're doing well. And it's made an enormous difference in their lives. It's been going on for about 3 years. Then they switched from wheat to mung dal, and as you can see, the actual cost of producing has gone up so that it's higher than the revenues, which wasn't yet understood, and a couple of them had already collapsed, wasn't understood at the policy level. And then here we have the rice balls, where ICDS is paying more for the rice balls, but you're going to have more wastage. There seems to be a little profit involved, but there are all those complications of getting those rice balls around, and that's only one of a number of recipes. This, by the way, is the beneficiaries, children 3 to 6 who are in the Angawati centers, adolescent girls, okay, pregnant and lactating women, and this In the other state where they had worked with the mothers' groups, things were going quite well, but the groups weren't as robust, and the main reason they were going well is because they were had the basic simple powdered recipe and the revenues were higher than the costs. Bihar is switching the whole system. I'm just going to jump right through to the end to show one other interesting graph here. And anybody who wants this, I can send it to them if you can't get it online. The policymakers have to understand the financial variables for the success of these models to have them work. So basically, we found that if this model was done properly, it was much more effective than what had been done in the past and had many, many spillover benefits, including cutting out corruption. Sorry, this is supposed to help. Go faster. They are scaling up. I don't know whether they've learned a lot from the one state. Here's the convergence between rural development, which is the group that, the part of the government that helps with micro-enterprise, the women's programs, including federating at the state level so the women can lobby on their own behalf. They were doing that very actively in the state that had been working best, except for the policy shocks. And the Food Corporation of India is another one. So the Ministry of Health and others that we traditionally work with were less important. This is the last two graphs. It shows the policy shock and working days just by contracting out in the state where they contracted out the weaning foods to the state provider. So these women lost basically a big part of their market share. And here we have cost and revenues in the two states, which are basically the results of policy shocks where policymakers have made a decision which basically, as you can see, really damaged the program in MP, whereas it helped it in AP.
I'm a little bit puzzled about the overall objective of the program. You seem to suggest at some point that childhood malnutrition had not, in fact, been affected. So that sort of brings into question, why are we doing this? If the objective is to reduce childhood malnutrition and this is not affecting it, then we may need to think about other approaches. But I suspect that there are other objectives as well, and that's partly what I was wondering if you could clarify. So basically, these self-help groups are given a grant from the government to buy and prepare these nutritional products, and then they sell it to the population. Is that the idea, or because
no.
I wasn't quite sure how that was working.
Yeah, it is absolutely the case that there's not good evidence, except for some minor little small spots, that this program that's been going on for 40 years at least, I think, is actually affecting malnutrition, which is it supposed to be its purpose? Fortunately, I asked the same question as you when I first became the team leader for this. I thought, huh? What? So that was not part of our mandate. I think at this point, in some ways, it's become an entitlement, and they're trying to improve it, but it's you know, it's self-perpetuating for a lot of reasons. Obviously, it's not doing any harm, but no, it's not. It's not clear that it's addressing childhood malnutrition at all. And it may be better when they put micronutrients into it. But so it's continuing on, and they said decentralize. And the way the women are paid are not with a grant; they're given a price for the food, just like any vendor might be. So we're going to pay you so much. Per pound, per kilo, it depends, or per beneficiary for the food. So they actually turn the food in, and that's the price they're paid. And they were given technical assistance to get started. In some cases, what we found is those groups that had to buy their own equipment with their own money, and the ones who'd saved their own money, et cetera, understood what they were doing and did it better than the ones who were given things by CARE. And also the working with the mothers groups didn't make so much sense because, of course, the mothers group membership changes. You know, you're a mother of a young child now, but in 5 years you're not. So it, logically, it would should mean the group membership changes. But this business of working through the self-help groups did have all kinds of spin-over benefits and made more sense than the old system of buying from state-level suppliers. Yeah.
But the distribution is free to the recipients, though.
Yes, the recipients don't pay.